we are on the fourth step, and let's welcome Ross's
family. Amen.
Hi, everybody. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Russell.
Excuse me while I get situated here. Thank you, John. Old age, it's not for sissies. Somebody asked me what happened to me. And yeah, I'm fine. Thank you, John. I said 64. That's what happened to me. You always have to consider the alternative. I'm actually rejoicing in the whole thing. You know, the first 4 years of Alcoholics, and I'm an alcoholic, right?
Yeah.
And I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group. I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981, and I'm grateful for that. And it's really good to be here. When Alcoholics Anonymous, if you read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, and I really suggest that you read that book. It's probably one of the most important books next to the Big Book. It may even be more important than the Big Book in some respects, especially for old timers. For guys who are over 15 years, I recommend it for everybody. But you know, sometimes you get to a point where you got about 10 or 15 or 20 years, and you got the time, you're getting the medallions, and you know, they're not arresting you for DUI and stuff like that, but you just, you know, there's something missing. There's something missing. You can get a lot of time. You can have some, you read this stuff in the Big Book about experience much of heaven, being rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. And you know, they're not talking about just not drinking, because there's a lot of people not drinking, they're whack jobs, you know, and I mean, I love this organization, I love this fellowship, but it ain't exactly Well People's Anonymous. And so sometimes when you put a lot of time, and you know, you say to yourself, you're like, if only I had 5 years, I'd be okay. Or maybe when I have 10 years, I'll be okay. Or maybe when I have 15 years, okay. And you're going up to guys, new guys, and saying, you don't drink, and you go to meetings, and everything's going to be wonderful, and you're going to be okay. And you're doing the AA deal, and you're doing everything you're supposed to do in AA, and you've got 20 years, and you get in your car, and you drive away, and you say, when's it going to be okay for me? When am I going to stop being lonely? When am I going to experience the joy of living? When am I going to feel like the enthusiasm, feeling like every day I'm rocketing in the fourth dimension of existence? When's that going to happen to me? I'm doing everything they told me to do in here. And around that period, around that time, when you're doing everything you're supposed to be doing, and you've read the Big Book, you know, you can quote it, and you've got it memorized. You may want to look at Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers is a book that deals with the first 4 years Alcoholics Anonymous was in existence. In the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, when they start talking about the program, the way they start talking about the program, we read it before every meeting, is it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Have you all ever heard that before? I want you to think about what that says. Here's these guys, they write this book in 1939. It was published in 1939. About a fellowship, about a program that they've been actively using since 1935. You understand what I'm saying? They've been doing this thing since 1935. And in 1939, 4 years after doing this thing, they're experiencing much of heaven, they're being rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, and they say, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And then they have you read this book, which is a great book, the Big Book. It's the basic text. It's the text that we all agree on. No fights over the Big Book. Not too many fights, you know. But there's one thing we know. We know that in the 4 years that they were working this thing, the one thing they weren't doing, we know what they weren't doing, they weren't reading the Big Book. And so we got a lot of people staying sober, reading the big book, which is a good thing. I like to say controversial things. There's some guy going to listen to the tape on this and say, this guy's saying we shouldn't read. No, there's a lot of people staying sober, reading the big book. And they get 20 years and they get 30 years. But they're not experiencing. But you know what the thing is? If they're honest with themselves, they're saying, but you know, I'm not experiencing what these guys experienced. And that's because they're not doing what these guys did. They're just doing what it says to do in the big book. Which by the end of the big book, it says, you know what it says? We know but a little. Doesn't it say that? After these guys read it, he says, we know but a little. So therefore, your real reliance has to be on God. It says he'll show you how to create the fellowship you crave. And he says, see to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. So it comes right back to the beginning, really. It says, now you've read this book, you know, you're like worshiping this book, you're reading this book, you're basically doing the exercises in this book, you know, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, you're doing all this stuff. But somehow you get to the end, and now you got 15 and 20 years, and somehow there's something missing. There's something missing. And we come back to rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Their path was something they were doing during the first 4 years. You do what we did, you'll get what we got. Now, if you're not open-minded, and if you're a typical alcoholic who's self-centered in the extreme and think you know everything, and not only that, we're basically defiant. That's the chief characteristic, according to 12 and 12, we're defiant, which I think means if I tell somebody go left, they're going to say, screw you, I'm going right. I'm just not going, I ain't going left. You ain't telling me what to do. So if you're defiant, no matter how bad you feel, unless the, you know, the earth caves in or something, you're just not going to read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers because, you know, you can't tell me what to do. I'm 20 years. What do you, and you know, the problem is, you know, the problem with getting sober is we get too well too fast. The problem with having 20 years or 15 years or 10 years is since you got 10 years, 15 years, you figure you got it down because they're giving you this medallion thing, you know. So who can tell you anything? So the smarter you get, the more, you know, the longer the time you have, the more arrogant you get. That you can't be taught anything else. But if you ever get to the point where you get honest with yourself and you say, you know, I've got time and I've got a medallion, I've got this, but you know, it's just, it's, there's something missing. So you remember that line, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, and you pick up Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, which talks about what they actually did, specifically, not generally, what they specifically actually did, what the fellowship was about, what the people are about, what they did during the first 4 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, what they did, and it's going to open your eyes. Because after you read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, you know what you're going to say? You're going to say, none of this stuff is going on in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a few things going on, a few general things, but they're not doing what these guys did. And you may find yourself, if you're one of these adventurous types and you really want this thing, you hunger and thirst after righteousness. You hunger and thirst after... You know, in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, it says that the old timers, whatever the old timers were back then, I guess they had 4 years, found the following... Before the big book, they said, we found that knowledge and reading of certain books were absolutely essential for sobriety. And the three books they named was 1 Corinthians 13 by the Apostle Paul, the book of James, which talks about rejoicing when you have trials and tribulations and persevering by looking towards God and increasing your faith and becoming a mature, God-fearing individual. And the Sermon on the Mount, which is the only sermon given by Jesus was in Matthew 5, you know, 5, 6, and 7. And in Sermon on the Mount, on the Beatitudes, it says, blessed are those that hunger and thirst after righteousness. And, you know, most of the Bible is found within the big book. They just change the words around. It's sort of like a Bible commentary. Like they say, you know, that like do you have the sayings on the wall, like the sayings, first things first? Well, Dr. Bob made up that saying. It comes from the phrase in the Bible, seek ye first the kingdom of God and all his righteousness, and all things will be added unto you. Well, we have that in the big book. It's on the last page. It says, see to it, the relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. So it's all just sort of like paraphrases, mixed up and mixed around. But when you finally come down to it, when you start reading Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, and you get into the high test, industrial strength, serious as crap deal, you realize that, excuse me if I cry out in pain, the high crest, the high test stuff, you know, really the it is important, the people that hunger and thirst after righteousness. And I'm going to tell you why it's important, why this whole thing sort of like maybe has something to do with the fourth step. See, you want to hear about the fourth step, about, you know, how to make the list and how to do that. I'm not going to talk about any of that stuff. You need to read the, listen, if you read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you got to trust me on this. If you read the big, if you want this, I've never seen anybody who wants this bad enough, so bad that he can taste it, that can't figure out how to do the fourth step. You'll track somebody down. You'll wrestle your sponsor. You'll actually read the big book, which has, by the way, a chart. And you'll know. It tells you exactly how to do it, and you'll do a fourth step. Okay? I want to talk about something that's not necessarily in the book that you can see right off the bat. I'm going to read you a couple things. And maybe you'll get, you know, because one of the things that happens over a period of 32 years, when you work with people and you see them fail, and you see it, and you see people succeed and you fail, you start connecting the dots. You start seeing how this is related to that, and you know, because you look at these steps and you say, well, how does step 3 relate to step 5 and step 10? And you start connecting dots by actually going through stuff in your life, trials and tribulations in your life, by adopting certain attitudes and working these steps over and over again, where all of a sudden you see connections where you never saw connections before. And so I'm going to read you a few things, and you know, maybe I'll hit upon something that you haven't thought about before. I want to read something from He Sold Himself Short. This is a story in the big book by one of the guys, one of the first guys that was doing this thing for the first 4 years. And I think I read this last week, and there's a certain amount of repetition here, but that won't kill you. Repetition is good for alcoholics. It's good for everybody, actually. These last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years a day outside to live. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am, and over my AA years, I've made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods is not great, but I have a fortune in friendships, in courage, in self-assurance, and in an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, now this is the above all stuff. You know, whenever I see stuff like this, above all, I say, you know, I better pay attention. It's like when they say in the book, the great fact is this and nothing less, which I think means that this is the great fact and it's nothing less than that. You want to pay attention to stuff like this. It says, above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. You know, you guys have probably been to a lot of AA meetings. I've been to a lot of AA meetings, right? You know, I've been to a bunch, you know. You've been to a lot of discussion meetings. You know, when was the last time you heard somebody say, you know, the greatest thing that ever happened to me is my relationship with God? And talk about that at discussion meetings. When was the last time you went to a discussion meeting and everybody was talking about that? Nobody was talking about problems or anything. They were talking about, I cannot believe what's happened to me. That I don't have material goods. My material goods aren't great. I'm modestly successful. I got all sorts of things, but you want to know something? The greatest thing in the world has happened to me. You know? A relationship with a gracious God that has permitted me to help others and try to love on them when I can. When was the last time you heard that? That talked about an AA meeting or a STEP meeting or anything like that? You don't hear that much in Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, there's a reason why you don't hear that in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because it makes people nervous. Because first of all, they start thinking that maybe they might have to do that. And that sounds like a little religious and a little this and a little that. But here's the problem. Do you want what they had? You better ask yourself this question. What do you want? Do you want to just pick up a 20-year medallion and get in your car and feel alone? Do you want to live lives of quiet desperation, but you could say, well, at least I got this medallion in my pocket? I mean, is that what you want? You just want to be dry? You want to be able to have bragging rights that, you know, the next day function, I got 30 years, I got 20 years? Or do you want to be rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence? You know, because they didn't say, I don't think they said, if you don't do what we did, you're going to get what we had anyway. I think they said, if you want what we have, and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. You're not even ready unless you want what they had. This is what they had. This is the only thing they had. This guy doesn't have any money. He says, I don't have any money. He says, my assets aren't great. He says, the greatest thing that he's accomplished is his relationship with God. That's all he wants to talk about. This guy, you know what he was doing? He wasn't reading the big book. You know what he was doing? He was reading 1 Corinthians 13. He was reading the Bible. He was reading the book of James. And he was reading Sermon on the Mount. Seek ye first the kingdom of God. He was reading. That's what they were doing in Alcoholics Anonymous when they were taking this rocket ship ride and being propelled in the fourth dimension of existence. It doesn't really play well in AA. Because you see, the reason why the big book plays well is because this is something we can all agree on, because it doesn't hurt anybody's feelings or rub anybody the wrong way. The hackles of our neck, we can all sort of accept this. And so you can accept the big book for the first 5 years or 10 years or maybe the first 15 years of sobriety. You understand? You can accept it forever until the day you die. But understand, you're going to get what you get based upon what you're willing to surrender. And so when you get to 15, 20, 30, 40 years, and you're not getting this rocket ship ride and experiencing much of heaven, and you're wondering why, it's because you weren't willing to dig a little deeper in the well. You weren't willing to go farther, as far as these guys went. So don't expect to get what these guys got. If you're gonna bake a chocolate cake, you better be willing to throw in some chocolate. You know, if you're saying, I want the chocolate cake, but I'll tell you one thing, I don't want to hear about chocolate, you know? Don't expect to be eating the chocolate cake. I went to, and that's important, really. Isn't it important? It says to be ready to do this. I mean, are you ready? It says you got to want what these people have. You got to want what we have, which means you got to develop a we, right? You got to have a we. I mean, it says if you want what we have, I suppose there was a we back then. I suppose there were people just like us. They went to a room and they looked at some guy and they said, man, I wish I could be like him. We don't put people up on his pedestals, but we do. You know, this is like one person leading the other person down the road while he's looking at somebody else. And we're not even ready unless we want what somebody has. We see something in somebody, whatever we see in them. And when I was 3 months sober, I went to a meeting called the Keynote Group. And my sponsor took me there, and there was a guy speaking from the podium named Dal Kennedy. We're talking 32 years ago. I remember it like it was yesterday. That's funny how those things happen in your mind. You know, you want this thing so bad. You know how badly you want this thing, guys? I'm talking to the guys. I'm talking to the gals, too, but I specifically talk to the guys because I am a guy. You know, and so I sort of like understand where guys are at, how guys think. I've sponsored a lot of guys who've seen the film. You got to want this thing more than sex. Because if you don't want this thing more than sex, sex will tear you away from this thing. If you don't want this thing more than the woman will take you away from this thing. You know, you got to want this thing more than money. Because if you don't want this thing more than money, if it ain't more precious to you than money, money will take you away from this thing. Your job will take you away from this thing. You got to want this thing. This has got to be the number one deal in your life. That's why they say on the narrow road, few follow it. You know, few take the narrow road, most take the broad highway. My sponsor, when I first came in, he said, you know, many are called, but few are chosen. It's because somewhere down the road, as soon as things get a little bit better, you want something, all of a sudden we start looking at those, well, Bill Wilson called them worldly clamors. Clamors of the world. Just turn on the TV, go to the movies, look at the, what are those big, those billboards and everything, see what they're talking about. The money, the property, and things. And that's what we suck our thumbs about. We become some thumb-sucking crybabies. That's what we chase after. That's what we try to monitor our lives about. Says we can't manage our own life. No human power can save us. Only God could and would if he was sought, right? If he was sought. There is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Right? So, I mean, that's why they say all that stuff. How many people actually live it? It says the central part. The great fact is this. Our whole lives have been, it's a revolution. He says, ideas, emotions, and attitudes that were the driving forces of these men's lives were shifted off to the side, and they became dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. So before you came in here, if you were like me, and all you did is you wanted to look at the skirts, you know, my sponsor used to say, you know, Russ, underneath every skirt is a slip. If all you wanted to do is look at the skirts, and all you wanted to do is you wanted the car, and all you wanted is you wanted the money, and all you wanted was you wanted the prestige. And now you're sober, and you're 5 years and you're 10 years, and all you want is the money, and all you want is the car, and all you want is the prestige, and you're looking at the skirts. Well, I guess you haven't experienced that whole set of ideas, attitudes that have been shifted over to one side. You're just basically doing the same thing you were doing before, living the same life you were living before, somehow expecting different results, doing the same stuff you were doing before, except you get to pick up a medallion. And you get to go to A rooms and talk to other people that are doing the same crap most of the time and complain about the same stuff, but saying, isn't it great we're sober? You know, a form of religion without power, without any power, still involved in alcoholism and alcoholic thinking and not even knowing it. You know the lady who said she didn't know her husband was an alcoholic until one day he came home sober? Well, sometimes you don't even realize you're living a defeated life in fear until you get to spend a week or two without fear.
Wow.
Sometimes you don't realize how much you're sacrificing the best for the good, because all you're doing is living the good and you haven't experienced the best. But I'll tell you what, when you've experienced the best, I haven't experienced the best yet, one day, but when you've experienced the best, trust me, good is not good enough. You know, you no longer settle for good when you've experienced the best. So I'm at this meeting with this guy, Al Kennedy, gets up, and he starts talking, and I can't remember a word he said. I was in the front row looking at this guy. I can't even explain it. It's one of these things where the guy was talking, you know, I'm a selfish, self-centered, delusional, you know, alcoholic. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous 3 months before that. You know, I came in, you know, like I like to say, when the consequences of my drinking came at me faster than my ability to lower my standards, I'd lost everything. I'd had a lot of stuff. Been to law school, had a lot of good stuff, you know. Lost it all. You know, I died, you know, at 31. I mean, my life was over. I thought it would never be better again. I couldn't envision life without drinking. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had like a couple of neurons working, they were waving goodbye to each other, and I thought my life was over. And I'm sitting there, and I'm looking at this guy, and I'm watching him, and I'm thinking, I said, man, I don't even know what he had. I had never met a man like this. Because I didn't hang around men like this. I hung around guys that talked about gals and talked about sports, talked about booze and talked about money and talked about the things that I don't want to say that alcoholics talk about, that the entire world talks about. I hung around people that were talking about the same stuff they talk about on TV, stuff they talk about on the radio, stuff they talk about out there, stuff they talk about in here, stuff that people talk about. And this guy was different. That's why I had never hung out with a guy like this. You know, in a sense, guys like this would have scared me. I wouldn't have even known what to say. but I was intrigued by him. He was amazing because he was like part of my we. He became part of my, he was one of these guys, if you want, we have, he was one of these guys that walked in the room, I looked at him, I listened to him, I said, I don't know, even know what he has, but I wish I could get some of that stuff. Because he wasn't self-conscious, he was, I could tell that this guy was, he was strong. I mean, strong in the sense that he had a sense of himself and who he was and what he was, and he was comfortable in his own skin. And I was never comfortable in my own skin. And he was comfortable. This was the man that was talking about himself, and he was transparent and comfortable in his own skin, and he didn't really, he really had nothing. He could care less what I thought about him. And I'm a guy, whether I understood this or not, I understood it now. I understand it now that my whole life was, what do you think about me? My entire life was, what do you think about me? And why do you think it that way? And if you don't think a certain way, I can't go to sleep at night. You know what I mean? And how do I make people feel this way about me? My whole life was about me and what people think about me. And this guy was not even looking at other people. He was marching to a beat of a different drummer. And even though he was strong and he had a sense of himself, he wasn't like arrogant. He was in a strange way sort of humble. You know what I mean? In a weird way, he wasn't like me, like a name dropper or bragging or anything like that. Not that kind of like I'm bragging about myself. Because he wasn't bragging about himself. He was just telling the truth about himself. You know, I didn't even know what the truth was or what the truth looked like. I just knew about things and stuff. You know, I'll tell you about my stuff. I'll tell you about my things. I'll tell you about whatever, you know. And somehow the way the magic works from this thing, when people are giving their testimony, you just sort of know in your heart when you're not being fed. You know, when you're a bullshit artist, you know when you're being bullshitted, and you know when you're being told the accurate truth. And I was just amazed at this guy. It was amazing to me. Now, of course, I'm looking at this guy like I can't even believe what's happening. I'm assuming the entire world sees what I'm seeing. Everybody's looking at what, but you know, there were guys smoking the jabak. Other guys, let me, I can't believe, you know, I got to get out of here. I got a date. You know, it's like everything else in A. You know, when the pupil's ready, the teacher will appear. I was a pupil. I was ready for this deal. I wanted this thing more than anything else. He was put in front of me. I wanted that deal. Didn't matter that nobody else in the group saw it. I saw it. He was there for me that night. I wanted that deal. And between him and a few other men that I met, I wanted that deal so badly that even with all the distractions that, and the stuff that comes at you, that the world throws at you as you're staying sober, the financial debacles, the sex, the relationship problem, all the crap it throws at you, that it's amazing how anybody stays sober. Somehow, some way, I always came back to that guy or this deal, and I did this stuff and I focused on that thing. I'm not saying I didn't go off in the weeds sometimes or stuff like that, but I focused on that because I wanted this more than anything. Blessed are those that hunger and thirst after righteousness, that want this more than anything else. You see, I can talk about a lot of things. I can talk about about what happened to me and give my testimony, but I can't do whatever has to be done inside of you to make you want this deal more than anything else in your life. I can't do that. So, you know, I watch this guy, and I want to be like this guy, and I start working this deal, and I read this book, and as one of the things, there's a lot of things. I had a guy, I think I told you guys about this last week, but it's a true story. You know, I try to tell people the truth. You know, the truth will make you free, but first it'll piss you off. I mean, I have a sign out. You know, Jack Nicholson said in A Few Good Men, say, the truth, you can't handle the truth. Can you hear? I'm going to tell you the truth. Here's the truth, okay? I'm going to give you a little truth. I gave a guy the truth the other day. He didn't like it. I told him the truth. You know, what should I do? If I'm sponsoring somebody, should I tell him the truth? Yeah. Should I say, well, I'm not going to tell him the truth because he's not going to like it? So I'll lie to him? I'll make a. Here's the truth. The guy said, will you sponsor me? I said, sure. What do I do? So what's the deal? You know, make me wonderful. And, you've got the key to wonderfulness, you know, make me wonderful. So I said, I'll tell you what, meet me on Saturday morning at 9:30, we have a meeting, and you'll hang out with me and the guys, and we'll talk about what we talk about, and you'll meet the guys, and we'll develop a relationship, and you'll hear what our deal is, and what's going on, and just come on down. So he says, okay. So he comes on down. And we have a meeting, you know, like a regular AA meeting, you know. people talk, you know, we talk at this meeting. I think it's a pretty good meeting. You know, the sobriety's pretty solid. And then afterwards, we go out to lunch. We have like a 2 or 3 hour lunch, you know, an AA lunch, you know, 2 or 3 hours. A couple of pastors come along that I know, some of the guys I hang out with, like Bill Wilson had his Sam Shoemaker and his Ed Dowling. You know, I have my Kerry Miller and, you know, my John Glenn. John Glenn's my sponsor. He's got 57 years and he's a Baptist preacher. We got those guys come. We all hang around, about 8 or 9 or 10 of us guys, and we talk what we talk about. And we end up only talking about God and stuff, somehow mixed in with other stuff. And so the thing is over, and he says, okay, so what do I do now? Because, you know, in his mind, we really haven't done anything. haven't done anything, you know? And so I tell him this. I said, well, we just do the same thing next week. He says, yeah, but what do you want me to do? He says, well, you can, if you want, you can meet me on Wednesday. We'll do the same thing on Wednesday. He says, yeah, but what am I supposed to do? I said, look, I said, this is the way it works. I said, assuming I live, you hang out with me or people like me for the next 20 years, and in about 15, you'll start feeling better. Now, I know this sounds a little like, you know, but you see, here's the thing. See, that's what happened to me. I hung out with these men that were farther along the line than me. It wasn't because I was bright. Right when I was bright or brilliant, I talked myself into. I told myself I rationalized stuff. I told myself rationalized. I talked myself into the stupidest, dumbest things. I hung around men that I was excited to hang around, that I wanted what they had. And after listening to their conversations, how they handled people, how they talked to other people, how a life affected them, how they handled cancer, how they handled criticism, how they handled stuff I had to say, after watching them, not for 1 week. Not for 3 weeks, but for 20 years, for 30 years. And guess what? I'm still doing it. I started to think like them. I started to act like them. I started to behave like them. I like to think, to a certain extent, I turned into them. You know, I was told the man and woman you'll be in the next 5 years will depend upon the people you hang out with and the books you read. And trust me, the books you read will depend upon the people you hang out with. Your thoughts and what comes out of your mouth and what you're thinking will depend upon your conversations at the dinner table or the lunch table with these guys. And so that's what I told him. And he gave one of these nervous laughs. I recognize the laugh. You know, it's sort of like a combination of, you got to be kidding me. Because I'm not in here for the 20-year, 15-year plan. I thought you were just going to tell me the answer, then I could leave and be wonderful. You know what I mean? It's a combination of, you've got to be kidding me, that can't be true, and thinking, I don't think he's joking, and maybe he's right, you know what I mean? And I haven't seen him since. Now, here's the strange thing. You know those 10 guys that hang around? They're always there. They've been there for the last 5, 10 years. They're doing great. Because apparently, these guys really want it. They really want the deal. So you sort of vote with your feet in this deal, you know? You're either going to be a dilettante or you're going to be somebody who really wants this thing. So in the book, it says the following. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect. Remember the drinking thing? Okay. So what does that have to do? Here's the deal. What does that have to do with the thinking thing? Because I've been in Alcoholics for 32 years, and most people in Alcoholics Anonymous don't have a drinking problem. Did you know that? They don't have a drinking problem. Most of the guys I sponsor don't have a drinking problem. I rarely work with people that have drinking problems. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I've done my stint of the drink problems. I could probably do it again. But most people I deal with don't have a drinking problem. I mean, as a matter of fact, drinking's not really even the problem. It has nothing to do with, you know, drinking is really, you know what drinking is. Drinking is really the, what does it say? It's a symptom of the problem. It's a mere symptom. Our problem centers in our mind, not our body. Our problem centers in our mind. Our problem is a thinking problem. It's a thinking problem. If you're an alcoholic, you have a chronic progressive disease that has to do with your brain. And I'm sorry to say, I'm looking at you guys, and I think most of you guys only have one brain to deal with. So if you're sober and you have a brain, you're in a shitload of trouble. Because if this book is right, and you have a chronic progressive disease, and it centers in your brain, and most of the time you're selfish and self-centered, but you don't even know that, you know what I mean? You know, and you step on the toes of others, but you don't even realize that. And you can't even get rid of it, because it says in the big book, it says above everything, we must get rid of this selfish thinking. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. And you don't even want to go to that God thing, which is why they don't talk about it in a lot of meetings, and they get mad at people that do, you know what I mean? And so how are you going to resolve this problem? When you don't want to hear about God, and you don't want to hang around with people that talk about God, and you don't want to read the Bible, and you don't want to pray, and you don't want to do any of that crap. What you want is you want to come up to me on a Saturday and say, give me the answer, so I can give you the answer, so you can leave and never speak to me again. And do it with your brain. So how do you expect to get this thing? I didn't tell you the end story about this Al Kennedy guy. Remember Al Kennedy? He walks out of the room. I turned to my sponsor. I said, man, that guy's incredible, because I wanted maybe we can hang around him. I finally, he said, and he turns to me and he says, and I told you this story before if you haven't heard it. He turns to me and this, I swear, I'm not making this stuff up. He says, you know, he's dying of cancer. And it's like I didn't even hear him. I said, because I'm an alcoholic, if I have a hangnail, that's good for 15 meetings, you know. I said, I mean, how can a guy who's dying? I said, no, I'm talking about the guy who just did the meeting. He says, yeah, he's dying of cancer. I said, what are you talking about? I said, what are you, nuts? The guy who just did the meeting, he didn't mention anything about cancer. He didn't say, I'm dying of cancer. He didn't say, I mean, like, can you imagine most of the discussion meetings you would go to if somebody was dying of cancer? You think you'd hear about it? Yeah. This guy's up there doing a step series or whatever the heck he's doing, doesn't even mention it. He says he's got 3 months to live. 3 months to live. You know? Didn't even mention it. You know, didn't even act, you know, and I said, he didn't say anything. He said, no, he didn't. 3 months later, 3 or 4 months later, Al Kennedy was dead. I saw him one time. I heard that story. That was the story. He died. Made a lasting impression in my life. You know, sometimes you got these people that come in your life. They make lasting impressions. You know, you can't fake this. You can't fake this stuff. So how do you get, man, I got to tell you something. If you can get to that point where you got 3 months to live, you know something, and you're helping other people, you know, and you're focused on God, and it ain't even bother, you know, it ain't even upsetting you, and you're doing, man, I'll tell you, there ain't nothing. There ain't nothing's going to touch in this world. You know, when I'm walking with when I had that big argument with my sponsor, and I was so right, and he was so wrong, and I was so right, and he was so wrong, and blah, 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 and I did my power-driven argument, blah, 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 and I was all upset and everything like that. And his only answer to me about some guy that I was arguing about, and he said, Russell, it doesn't bother me like it bothers you. And I looked at him, I said, he had 15 years. I said, how could it not bother you? I says, everything bothers me. Everything bothers me. If you're an alcoholic and you ever get bothered, that's your problem. Whenever, you know what it says in the spiritual axiom? Whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause is, something wrong with you. Whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause is, something wrong with you. You ever get disturbed during the day? You ever get disturbed in traffic? You ever get disturbed at home? You ever get disturbed at AA meetings? Yeah, you got a problem. And you're looking at me like I'm crazy because you're saying, well, this is the way I've thought all my life. And I said, that's your problem. It's like I said to my sponsor, well, this is my personality. This is just the way I am. I said, that's your problem. Your personality is killing you. And you don't want to give it up. You can't even envision a life without that personality. You think life is about being disturbed all the time. You think if you got, here's what you think. Here's what you think. Here's an old idea you have. You ready for your old idea? You think that if you have cancer, that would bother you. Right? Isn't that what you think? That's not true. I'm telling you, it's not. I know for a fact it's not true. I know it's for a fact that you can be joyous and feel great even if you have cancer and you have a few months to live. I know that. I know that because I've seen it. I've known it in my own personal life. But you think that that's impossible. Because for you, it is impossible. That doesn't mean it's impossible, folks. This talks about doing the impossible. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive. Man, you know something? I could do 3 hours of meetings just on one line. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. One day you ought to sit down and read that a couple times and try to figure out what they're saying. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. You ought to think about what that means. There's some sort of sensation that alcoholics experience. That's elusive. You know what's elusive? It means you can't put your finger on it. You can't put your finger on it. You're not even sure it's there. You're not even sure you can comprehend it. But there's something going on that's elusive that causes you where you can't even separate truth from false, fact from fiction, The wrongdoings of others, you know, the wrongdoings of others, fancy to rear, real or imagined, have the power to actually kill. That's the kind of mind you have. That's the kind of mind I have. How are you going to cure yourself from that deal? When you don't even know you have that deal, and you don't even know what I'm talking about right now, and you're trying to figure out what does that mean. And I'm telling you, the book says you have that deal, it's going on with you right now, it's killing you right now, and that's stuff that's going to kill you, and you're saying, what does it look like? Because I don't even know what he's talking about. So how are you going to cure yourself of something that you have that you don't even know what it is? Which has to do, apparently, with your thinking. Now that you've solved the drinking problem, which is really not really the problem, how are you going to deal with the thinking problem? And that's like a throwaway line. The people read and they don't even think what it means. What are they talking about? To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. You know what that means? That means when you're in the midst of your worst thinking, you think you're normal. Now, I'm telling you, this is a serious deal. When you're dealing with alcoholics, you're dealing with a serious disease. That's the deal. When you are really in the grips of this thing, it feels normal to you. If you get a sponsor, you start working the thing, and he starts saying things to you that is the truth, it seems weird and abnormal. What seems normal to you is if you got a problem, you fix it, and pain and suffering is bad, and so give me the answer, or give me the pill, or give me the drink, because my problem is that I don't feel good right now. You don't want to hear this stuff like, hang around me for 20 years and 15 years you'll feel okay. You don't want to hear this stuff in the 12 and 12 where it says we start realizing the value of suffering. I mean, that's a whole different, because you got all these old ideas going on about this deal. All these old ideas, by the way, the result's nil unless you let go absolutely. Did you know that? You didn't let go of these old ideas? You don't even know what the old ideas are? Because they're not old ideas to you. They're normal to you. You know what I mean? You hear some guy talking like me, you say, this guy's crazy. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know what he's smoking, but I ain't doing, I'm here to stop drinking. I'm not here to start. That's crazy shit. Nobody thinks that way. Nobody in the world thinks this way. You want to know something? You're right. Nobody in the world thinks this way. The guy who followed Mother Teresa around when she went through the slums, he says, I wouldn't do what you do for $1 million. She said, neither would I. Go figure. Many are called, few are chosen. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes really once by taking a few drinks. Restless, irritable, and discontented. I was, so what does this have to do with the fourth step? Well, it has everything to do with the fourth step. Because the fourth step has to do with the first time you get to have a glimpse into how crazy you are. And let me tell you something, it's only a glimpse. And most of us don't even want to do it, and most of us don't even understand it, don't understand why we're doing it, and we get a glimpse. And just by a glimpse, it's so powerful, it sets us on a different road. Can you imagine if you live a life on a fourth step? Because we're so deluded. Because here's the deal. I'm looking at you guys, you're, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years old. You've been living with yourself for a long time, right? You've been living around, you've pretty much been living, how old are you? You, how old are you?
47.
So you've been living pretty much with yourself for 47 years, right? Yeah. Okay, so he's been living for, so he knows exactly what it's like, what's your name?
Manny
knows exactly what it's like to feel like Manny for 47 years. That's the only thing he knows what it's like, to feel like Manny. You know something? Feeling like Manny to Manny is perfectly normal. He's perfectly comfortable feeling like Manny. Now, he may not like some of the things he feels, and he may not want to feel some of the things he feels, just like I may not want to feel, but you want to know something? They're comfortable to him, because he's been dealing with this stuff all his life. Because he doesn't know any other way of feeling except the way he feels. And here's some guy at a podium, who's an alcoholic, by the way, who suffers from the same disease I'm suffering from, and he's got cancer, and he's talking to people, and it seemingly is not even bothering him, and he leaves, and he doesn't even mention it. And he's feeling, I don't know what the heck he's, but he's certainly obviously feeling a different deal. He's involved in a different deal than I'm involved in. But I want his deal. He don't want my deal. He had my deal. I want his deal. That's what the fourth step is the key. The fourth step is the key to his deal. So I'm driving along. I'll just tell you something. It happened to me the other day. It really is interesting stuff. And sometimes you got to, sometimes you just have to be around for 20 years before you see it. I mean, I don't know how to say it. Sometimes you just have to experience and go through the experience and go through the stuff and you see it when you see it. You experience it when you experience it. You know, there's different. And I'm driving around the other day. I woke up the other day. I do a lot of stuff. I go to a lot of meetings. I'm with people and stuff like that and involved in my church and doing the stuff. And the other day I got up and I don't know. I just felt a little funny. You ever feel a little funny? No, the thing is, I was feeling something that I was feeling something that I haven't felt that I don't usually feel. I was feeling different. You know what I mean? I was feeling different. I was feeling a little off. Just a little off. You know, like I was feeling a little alone. You know what I mean? You ever feel like a little alone, a little separate? I was feeling maybe a little anxious. You know, I wasn't feeling bad. I wasn't feeling horrible. I wasn't feeling any of that stuff. I was just feeling a little off. I wasn't feeling the way I usually feel. On the rocket ship ride, you know, enthusiastic, excited. I was just like a little off. And I couldn't put my finger on it. You know, except I knew I wasn't feeling the way I always feel. But it was in a real strange way, sort of comfortable. In other words, it wasn't so uncomfortable. I mean, I could live with it. And it was reminiscent of something. You know, it started me remembering something because I'm starting to think, because, you know, I am a little self-centered, so I started thinking, why do I feel like this? What am I feeling? What am I trying to feel? And I said, I recognized what it was. You know what it was? It was the way I used to feel before I was sober. It was way I used to feel before I was sober. And when I say before I was sober, I mean emotionally sober. It was the way I used to feel during the first 10 or 15 years of my sobriety. I didn't recognize the alcoholism. And it almost felt comfortable because I didn't want to have a drink. I wasn't going to the bar. You understand what I'm saying? I was just a little off. But if you're an alcoholic, the land of a little off is exactly where you live. You live in a little off. You know what I mean? You don't live in the notch. You live a little bit off the notch. And if you hang out in the land of a little off long enough, it starts feeling real comfortable. And all of a sudden it occurred to me, I think I'll go to a meeting. I needed a meeting. I mean, I do a lot of stuff. I do a lot of service. I went to a meeting. I didn't recognize what it was. It was the way I used to feel. And that's how elusive this disease is. It doesn't come at you front and center. You're going to have a drink. All it does is you're working, you're striving, you're picking up your medallions, you're doing your stuff, you're running around, you're doing AA, you're doing this, you're doing the thing, and you just like feel a little bit, you almost don't recognize it. Except, and I guess the reason I recognize it, is I'm so used to not feeling that way. I'm so used to the enthusiastic rocket ride, focusing on him and everything like that, and it even took me time to sort of recognize it. That's why the fourth step, and working all the steps, but specifically the fourth step, when we start dealing with our thinking, we start dealing with resentments, we start dealing with loneliness, we start dealing with anxiety, we start dealing with the emotions, we start dealing with that stuff. You know what I mean? That's why it's so important to sort of like see that stuff up front and centered so we can recognize it. Because we don't recognize it. It's just the way we feel. And we don't realize that that's the real alcoholism. I mean, my God, how many years do we have to drink and get into trouble before we realize we have a drinking problem? And that usually comes to us because we're thrown in jail or somebody divorces or something crazy happens. Do you have any idea how many years you can think crazy? Crazy. And not even realize you're crazy? Because to you, you're just thinking the way you always thought. And if you think that drinking is your only problem, and if you stop drinking, you won't have a problem, then as long as you're collecting medallions, you know what I mean? You could be the craziest son of a bitch in the room, going nuts and hurting and having a horrible life and not even realize you have a horrible life, because to you it's not horrible. It's just the way you are. And you don't even realize that there's another way of doing it. That you could be rocketing in the fourth dimension of existence. You can experience much of heaven. You don't even realize what you're missing. Because you think, because they're giving you a medallion on birthday night. And they're all cheering for you. Say, well, I must be doing AA. You got it? Thank you very much. God bless you.